It lays the predicate and the foundation for the development of a weather satellite that will permit man to determine the world's cloud layer and ultimately to control the weather. And he who controls the weather will control the world.
Why do so many in the ranks of the human race seem so unwilling to face reality? Why are so many so willfully blind to the converging catastrophes that are so rapidly closing in on us all? Later in this broadcast, we will address that question. From a human psychological standpoint, why the human brain, in most cases, is not equipped to even recognize anything other than what it perceives to be an immediate threat. This fatal flaw of human psychology may be the final linchpin that determines our collective fate. Dire, breaking headlines from the front lines of biosphere implosion continue to come in. I'll cover as many of those breaking headlines as I can in this broadcast before outlining the scientifically recognized psychological functions of the human brain that so far has rendered completely inadequate the collective response to what's unfolding around us. If we remain on the current course, how much longer till we collectively hit the wall at full velocity? This is Dane Wigginton. You're listening to the Global Alert News Hour for April 7th, 2018. As always, this is a commercial-free news hour brought to you by geoengineeringwatch.org and is broadcast throughout Northern California on 1670 AM, 104.9 FM, and 105.7 FM, Saturday mornings from 6 to 7 AM, Sunday mornings from 7 to 8 AM. Global Alert News is also rebroadcast on the East Coast by the PRN Radio Network. Our new time there is Wednesdays at 2 PM Eastern. Recordings of this broadcast can be found at geoengineeringwatch.org under the recent top stories and radio sections. As always, this announcement, if you're in the Reading area, free geoengineeringwatch.org informational materials can be picked up from Orchard Nutrition, from the staff in the vitamin section. For those not in the Reading area, the latest geoengineeringwatch.org awareness-raising materials can be ordered from the homepage of geoengineeringwatch.org for our approximate cost of producing and shipping. This week's Gem Fair event, G-E-M-F-A-I-R-E, in Puyallup, Washington, April 6th, started yesterday through tomorrow, April 8th. Fully stocked geoengineeringwatch.org informational booth there with very dedicated activists that will pass on information that you can share with others to help us expose, fully expose, the most dire and immediate threat we collectively face short of nuclear cataclysm, which is climate engineering, which is also weather warfare, which is also biological warfare. All of us are needed in this battle. If you're in the Puyallup area, please pick up materials, help us to share them, help us to sound the alarm. The week after the Gem Fair event, San Diego, California, the Scottish Rite Event Center. That's April 20th through 22nd. The week after, in Santa Rosa, California, an area hard hit, inarguably, by fire cataclysms for which, at minimum, the stage was set by climate engineering, cutting off the moisture, fueling the ferocious winds, covering the foliage with incendiary dust, toxic metals like aluminum and barium, which is from the climate engineering fallout. Climate engineering is absolutely, inarguably, directly related to the massive and accelerating forest burndowns around the globe. Search geoengineeringwatch.org and learn more about why climate engineering is so much at the core of the forest incinerations. And come to the Santa Rosa event, the geoengineeringwatch.org booth at the Gem Fair event against Sonoma County Fairgrounds. Pick up materials. Help us to circulate those materials. Help us to sound the alarm. Free admission also at the Gem Fair events to those that are just going to pick up geoengineeringwatch.org for our information. Our deepest gratitude to the Gem Fair event staff for their help with raising awareness on this most critical issue. Now, let's examine the most dire threats we collectively face before considering why, so far, the human brain, in so many cases, is not responding appropriately to those threats. First, Frontline reports how Big Wireless made us think that cell phones are safe. Headlines like this are everywhere for anyone who chooses to investigate. Unfortunately, the vast majority, because the convenience and entertaining distraction of wireless devices is just simply too much to give away. Like the proverbial monkey with their hand in the jar is an analogy I shared from something I saw when I was 10 years old on a documentary, and it struck me even at that age, as I've shared before, as being incredibly profound, the way some cultures have captured and killed monkeys for their consumption or to consume was to tie a jar with a fruit in it to a tree. The monkey reaches his hand in and grabs the fruit, and he won't let go. They won't let go. Even though it means their death, they won't let go. Are we not collectively behaving in exactly the same manner, just like the inhabitants of Easter Island, if you will? We are swimming in electrosmog. It is damaging to all life. Life is electrical. When will this be acknowledged and understood by the population? Another headline, the disinformation campaign and massive radiation increase behind the 5G rollout. That's what's next, 5G. The dangers of 5G, reasons to be concerned from this report. The USA is currently leading the way on 5G. At the press conference where the Federal Communication Commission, FCC, head Tom Wheeler announced the opening up of low, mid, and high spectrums, there was no mention of health effects whatsoever, but the dangers are real. That fact is beyond dispute. Thousands of studies link low-level wireless radio frequency radiation exposure to a long list of adverse biological effects, including DNA single and double-strand breaks, oxidative damage, disruption of cell metabolism, increased blood-brain barrier permeability. Let's combine that fact with the known climate engineering fallout, aluminum, barium, strontium, manganese, the mercury that's also in the atmosphere from various sources, all of which we're absorbing. The combination of, for example, as I've stated in the past, mercury and aluminum increases overall toxicity by as much as 10,000%, 100 times. And now, because of the immersion in the electrosmog, the radio frequency transmissions, that increases the blood-brain barrier permeability, which means all these highly toxic metals can more easily enter our brain cells. This is a recipe for absolute extermination of our species. And we have a population that's pretending it's not happening, and it's affecting the entire web of life. It's not just us. It's affecting everything. Continued dangers. Melatonin reduction. If you don't know what melatonin is, it's essential to a healthy, functioning human being. Disruption to brain glucose metabolism, generation of stress proteins, the list goes on. We're swimming in electrosmog, swimming in a toxic fallout from countless forms of human activity, climate engineering being the greatest source of toxic atmospheric particulates, beyond dispute. Moving on to more elements in the toxic sea in which we are all swimming. This new report on yet more glyphosate contamination is from globalresearch.com. German beer industry in shock over Monsanto glyphosate contamination. The Munich Environmental Institute has released shocking results of laboratory testing. It has completed on 14 of the most sold beers in Germany. The probable carcinogen and world's most used herbicide, glyphosate, was found in all 14 of the beers tested. Imagine that. These contaminants are everywhere. Same is true with climate engineering. Had they been testing for some of the heavy metals we mentioned, they would also show up. They're not being tested for. How much longer can the human body hold up under this bombardment of assaults? How much longer can the web of life hold up? The answer, not long. Not long. We are very near total collapse on countless fronts. Here's a headline from Green Med Info and other sources to consider, most especially if you fly. Why do airlines force us to breathe toxic air from jet engines? And there's more to this story than this report alludes to. I'll elaborate in a moment. Most air travelers are oblivious to the fact that the airline industry forces them to breathe in highly toxic jet exhaust fumes due to what is, from the perspective of public health, imbecilic and ruthless, neglectful aircraft design. Perhaps there is an agenda behind that contamination. And it's not just contamination from the aircraft engine on whatever particular aircraft that a person might be on. It's what's outside that aircraft, what these jet aircraft are flying through, an atmosphere that is filling with radioactive contamination from sources like Fukushima, and the absolutely horrific toxic layer from the climate engineering aerosol dispersions that aircraft are flying through and then pumping into the cabin. Consider this if you fly. It's not speculation or hypothesis. This is verifiable fact. Next important headline from Hakai magazine: a scheme to end the world's worst acid trip. Let's get back to the biosphere and the layer upon layer of insanity that the human race is pursuing in the desperate and futile attempt on the current course to try to tech their way out of the nightmare that's been created on our planet, a once thriving biosphere that's imploding by the day. The god of technology continued to be worshipped by the masses who have been trained to trust only what the power structure approved academician says, and to abandon their own sense of reason. The only thing we can do to Earth's natural systems by interfering with them is harm them. Isn't that clear at this point? Here's the headline: a scheme again to end the world's worst acid trip. This geoengineering idea is potentially risky and largely untested, but it does work theoretically. There's that unimaginable arrogance of academia and a public who simply is too distracted with their iPhones to care what the academic world is now not just proposing, but likely actively engaged in already, along with the climate engineering operations. From this report: faced with a warming world and few, if any, prospects for dramatic greenhouse gas reductions, some solutions for climate change problems have focused on deliberately manipulating the Earth's climate. Almost all geoengineering schemes ignore perhaps the most dangerous problem the planet faces: ocean acidification. There's other problems equally dangerous, like total ozone layer collapse. This report doesn't mention that. But the report continues: by chemically manipulating the water on a vast scale, engineers could reverse ocean acidification. This plan, known as enhanced alkalinization, would reduce ocean acidification and, in theory, counteract warming. So says Andrew Linton, an oceanographer at Australia's Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization. And consider these organizations. They are funded by the military-industrial complex in some form or another. So their job is to find some way to convince themselves and to convince others that we can tech our way out of the damage industrialized civilization, militarized civilization, has already done to the planet. Linton shared his conclusions at a recent scientific meeting in Portland, Oregon. Let's consider what Linton states on this report. Alkaline injection can be thought of as a geological process on steroids, if you will. Pumping lime into the ocean would balance out the anthropogenic emissions, akin to how a Tums tablet settles a sour stomach. But there's a catch. All the Tums on Earth would not be enough. Consider the hubris of these reports. It's absolutely infantile and insane for these quote-unquote experts, academicians, to think that the ocean ecosystem is so incredibly simplistic that you can just add what amounts to a giant Tums tablet and everything will be okay. And that is their terms. That's their comparison, not mine. That's theirs. He continues: if we took every ship in the world and simply converted it to dumping lime into the ocean, that's the kind of level that would be required to do this. Think how incredibly absurd this proposal is. Very similar to the proposal for 10 million wind-powered water pumps to put in the Arctic, for the proposed attempt to pump colder deep ocean water to the surface to try to save the ice cap. What does that do? It thaws the methane on the seafloor faster than it's already thawing, allows the methane to escape to the atmosphere and turn the planet into Venus. The scientific community has, in so many ways, collectively lost their minds, and that's what they're paid to do, to come up with these preposterous proposals to try to pacify the population until the brutal bitter end, to make the population think, as they've seen so many times in so many science fiction movies, that the human race will always tech its way out of the disasters it's creating on the planet, and that is simply not reality. Every new layer of insanity simply drives more nails into our collective coffins. Let's look at Project Lucy and Project Alamo, which we believe data indicates is already going on. That's the microwaving of the atmosphere to try to degrade some of the methane that's escaping into the atmosphere that I've already just alluded to, because the seafloor is thawing and we have methane, mass methane expulsions happening, and that's not theory. If anyone searches, as I've outlined many times on previous broadcasts, Siberian methane expulsions or explosions, they'll see photos and film that's staggering. What looks like massive bomb craters all over the tundra from methane thawing and exploding into the atmosphere. It's happening now. That's why the geoengineers are so desperate to cool down the most populated areas of the nation that holds by far the biggest military in the world, the U.S., in order to pacify those populations. More on that in a few moments. The latest engineered winter weather event for the U.S. to create some surface level records while the atmosphere is uniformly far above normal temperatures, but the population on the surface is all too convinced by those cool downs. And again, the eastern half of the continental U.S., 1/200th of the Earth's surface area, 0.5%. Yet the people who live in those areas, who don't want to believe there's anything wrong with the climate anyway, who want to convince themselves that you can loot, plunder, and pillage the planet with no consequences indefinitely, that's a delusional notion. But the climate engineers are fueling that notion in order to, again, pacify the population, create division and confusion in the population, and that's working. So here we have, again, the latest proposal to tech our way out of the disaster we're creating on the planet by converting, think of how insane this is, every single ship on the planet to dump lime into the ocean as if that's going to fix our problem, along with the microwaving of the atmosphere, along with the spraying of toxic particulates to block some of the sun's incoming thermal radiation. Layer of insanity on top of layer of insanity on top of another layer of insanity, over and over, all pounding the nails into our collective coffins. Not speculation, fact. 70 years of climate engineering, 70 plus years, and the planet is virtually imploding. And although there are countless forms of human activity contributing to that implosion, climate engineering, mathematically, which includes the form of ocean engineering I just outlined, we have ocean iron fertilization. And think about those two forms of climate engineering. We have one form that appears to be already going on, and this was addressed in my recent debate with scientist Paul Beckwith, and his mistaken notion that ocean iron fertilization is some sort of panacea, which is to seed the ocean with elements that cause it, the ocean, to uptake even more carbon, to acidify the ocean even further than it already is. And yet we have now these proposals I just outlined to counteract that by converting every ship on the planet to dumping lime into the ocean to counteract the other form of geoengineering that's causing the ocean to uptake CO2 and acidity. And for those, and I still hear this false narrative, even in the ranks of the anti-geoengineering community, that CO2 is wonderful, the more the better. That is simply wrong. It's simply wrong. And to push that narrative is to completely alienate the ranks of academia, whom we need to find their courage and to come out of the shadows and to join us in the fight to expose and halt climate engineering. Get your facts straight if you want to help in the battle, the greatest battle, the most immediate threat we face to expose and halt climate engineering. If you want to help in that battle, have your facts straight. A boat doesn't float if it's mostly watertight. If you propagate information that may be accurate in some ways, but completely off target in others, that's a boat that is not watertight. It will not float. It will not help our credibility. Without credibility, we will lose this fight, period. Consider what you share. Make sure it's credible. Moving on. Scientists assess potential for super greenhouse effect in Earth's tropics. From this report, this is from multiple sources. Without its atmosphere, Earth would be a chilly place. Sunlight would illuminate the planet each day, and then much of its energy would leak right back into space, leaving the planet with an average surface temperature of around 0 degrees Fahrenheit. Fortunately for us, Earth has what's called a greenhouse atmosphere with gases like carbon dioxide, water vapor, and methane, and others that trap heat that is radiated up from the surface, much like a greenhouse collects light and turns it into heat so plants can thrive. Earth's atmosphere acts as a blanket holding in heat from the sun, so it does not escape back into space. The greenhouse effect makes our planet habitable. Now consider this, again, for those who think that exponentially rising levels of greenhouse gases are not a problem, that's not reality. It's not reality. Is CO2 necessary for life? Yes, of course. So is water. But as I've stated so many times, if you're 10 feet underwater, you're not going to do well. You're going to die a very quick death. And the same is true with exponentially increasing levels of greenhouse gases like CO2 and methane. Throws the entire energy balance of the planet off, as does climate engineering, trapping heat, more heat than it deflects. And there are many agendas with climate engineering. Obviously, the solar radiation management stated purpose is only one of the many agendas. And they're not really managing solar radiation management. They can create short-term, highly toxic cool downs. I'll get to more of that in a moment, an update on that. But at the cost of what? A worsened overall warming. They're trapping more heat than they deflect, destroying the ozone layer, contaminating the entire surface of the planet. I could go on. Bottom line, for those who think the buildup of greenhouse gases has no effect, that's not reality. Very clearly, the only reason that we can survive on this planet is the greenhouse gas layer. If it gets thicker, what must happen? The planet will and is warming rapidly. Not about Al Gore. It's about reality. And for those in the environmental communities who are ignoring the climate engineering elephant in the room, dump your hypocrisy, find your courage, face the greatest environmental threat of all, which you are ignoring, climate engineering. And the arrogance, the absolute incredible willful blindness and arrogance of the environmental communities and environmental organizations specifically is unimaginable. It's up to us to hold them accountable. Don't donate to these organizations if they are not willing to face the climate engineering threat. Why would you support an organization that claims to be helping the environment and claims to care about the environment and yet ignores the single greatest mathematical threat of all? Climate engineering. Continuing from this report, the climate is just right on Earth because of its atmosphere. Quote, in tropical regions, the heat just can't escape. And if nothing escapes, that part of the world just gets hotter and hotter. Part of what makes Earth just right is the interplay between temperature, water vapor, and heat in the form of infrared radiation. This is called an energy balance of the planet, and it has been completely obliterated, with climate engineering helping to tilt that imbalance further in the wrong direction overall every day. When Earth's surface gets hotter, more evaporation occurs, which releases water vapor into the atmosphere. Water vapor is a greenhouse gas. When more of it is in the air, it traps even more heat and radiates back down to the surface. Now, to break from the report and state this, a geoengineering insider, which I communicated with in the past from Oak Ridge Labs, and I republished this communication on geoengineeringwatch.org, made clear one of the goals of the geoengineers is to reduce atmospheric relative humidity. Very myopic approach to interfering with the planet's life support systems. I would ask anyone to consider this. When you have a big, white, puffy cumulus cloud float between you and the sun, immediate cool down. But when you're under a massive veil of geoengineered sprayed haze, often it creates a lens effect. We see increased UV radiation under some of these quote-unquote shields. It's not lessening the heating, it's actually worsening it and trapping it. And by interfering with the Earth's hydrological cycle and Earth's natural cloud formation, they are worsening the overall warming of the planet, not mitigating it. In addition, again, geoengineering is, by shredding the ozone layer, is killing plankton. Plankton are essential for the creation of the ocean marine layer. So what do the geoengineers do as they're destroying Earth's natural ability to create cloud cover and marine layer? They spray more, doing more of what initially caused so much of the cataclysm to begin with. So the more they do, the more they feel they have to do. Is this not the definition of total human insanity? And we have academia, again, silently standing by, pretending it's not happening. If you're in academia and you're listening to this, when will you find your courage? When will you Gather your colleagues up. Stand up together, not one at a time, or you will be dealt with partially by the power structure. You must stand up together as one. I'm communicating with a former Senate Armed Services Committee member, supplying him with a great deal of data to pass on to his colleagues for the same reason, so that they can stand up as one, so that they cannot be silenced. Continuing from this report about water vapor trapping heat, that extra infrared heat evaporates more water vapor, which traps more heat, then in turn evaporates even more water vapor, and so on. This becomes a feedback loop. I've spoken of this constantly, just like the methane in the Arctic. Massive feedback loop. Climate engineering and the very destructive attempt to hide the polar meltdown is actually making that meltdown worse overall, disrupting upper-level wind currents. That's altering ocean currents. We have warm water currents now pumping into the Arctic, melting methane on the seafloor. Methane migrates through the water column into the atmosphere and is covering the planet like a layer of glass, trapping heat. Every intervention with Earth's natural systems leads to cataclysm. When will the human race understand that? Just like with the human body, interfering with the natural processes of the human body leads to cataclysm. I need to condense and summarize some of this report because I have a number of important other breaking frontline headlines to cover. Bottom line is that these feedback loops fuel what is termed an SGE, a super greenhouse effect. I've spoken of this many times in many broadcasts. It leads to what is scientifically termed Venus syndrome. To remind what this syndrome is, for those that don't know what Venus syndrome is. Venus is not 900 degrees on the surface because of its proximity to the sun, as many unfortunately believe. Venus is 900 degrees on the surface because of its unimaginably dense atmosphere. Oceans that are now believed to have been on the surface of Venus from recent data are now in the atmosphere. The atmosphere is 100 times thicker and more dense than Earth's. Heat comes in, but it doesn't get out. All things being equal, Venus would only be 20 to 25 degrees warmer than Earth's baseline. That baseline, which has radically changed, which we believe frontline data now indicates, is 3.5 degrees C over its pre-industrial temperatures. That's about 6 degrees Fahrenheit. We're already a long ways toward what Venus should be on the surface if it had an equal atmosphere to Earth's. What happens when we undergo an SGE, a super greenhouse effect, and Venus syndrome? The feedback loops continue to accelerate, feeding on themselves, until our planet also turns into Venus. Here's a final statement from this report I do want to read. The super greenhouse effect, the SGE syndrome, regions are an interesting issue that we hadn't really thought about. Now, consider that from academia, the so-called experts. We hadn't really thought about that. Much like David Keith, the world's most recognized geoengineer, when I have reminded so many of what he stated to my question at an international geoengineering conference in regard to had he and his group studied the effects of dumping 20 million tons of aluminum nanoparticulates into the atmosphere annually, every year, 20 million tons, 10 to 20 million tons was their proposal, which we believe is occurring and data indicates is occurring from lab tests all around the globe. And his response to that was, in summary, have we studied the toxicological effects? No. Could terrible things happen tomorrow? We don't know. This is academia. These are our so-called experts doing whatever they want because they can. And why can they? Because we have a population that is far too entertained with their iPhones and their material distractions to pay attention to what's unfolding around them, to the planet, the biosphere, the web of life, unraveling by the day. If this trend doesn't change, we are done. It's that simple. We are done. And I know many don't like to hear that. But how else are we to wake the masses if we don't make the severity of what's unfolding clear? Unless we face the truth, we can't change it. We can't change reality. We have to face it first, fully face it, not partway. Again, a boat doesn't float if it's mostly watertight. You can't face most of the truth. You have to face all the truth, or you're missing essential parts. Climate engineering, the biggest part in the puzzle right now that we must expose. We must expose it. Academia has as I've stated so many times, completely betrayed the human race and the entire web of life in so many ways. More headlines. This next report is from Mashable.com and other sources. Severe heat wave roasts part of Asia. At least 7 countries shatter monthly records. It may be unusually cold. This is from the report. It may be unusually cold in the eastern U.S. right now, but in parts of Asia, dangerous, scorching, and relentless heat has been shattering records. As I stated earlier in this broadcast, the eastern half of the continental U.S. exposed to week after week of theatrically named winter storms, a psychological operation, while the planet goes into full-blown meltdown in so many locations. In between engineered winter weather scenarios, as they're doing in parts of Western Europe for the same reason they're doing it in the most populated portions of the U.S. And so many, how quickly they forget. Scorchingly hot summers, if there's a week or two of cold, they forget all about the overall trend. And that's one of the major agendas behind climate engineering that needs to be recognized and understood. From this report, at least 7 countries set monthly high temperature records at the end of March. These types of heat events are expected to become more frequent and severe as the world continues to superheat due to human emissions of greenhouse gases from the burning of fossil fuels. Geoengineering, of course, not mentioned here, not allowed to be mentioned by any mainstream source. As the overall climate gets warmer, it becomes easier to set warm record extremes, even in months that didn't used to see such hot and potentially deadly weather. How hot? Areas of India and the Middle East already seeing temperatures pushing 120 degrees. Do we see that on our media here? No, we don't see any of it. So for those in the geoengineered cool down zones in the U.S. are in ignorant bliss in regard to what's happening around the rest of the world. For many, as I stated in the massively geoengineered USA, the unfolding planetary meltdown seems a far-off fable. Week after week of engineered surface cool downs via the patented processes of chemical ice nucleated elements being sprayed. If you don't understand what these elements are and what processes are being carried out, search this subject on geoengineeringwatch.org. Engineered winter, engineered cool downs. You'll find lots of data. These elements being sprayed by the climate engineers over incoming precipitation events is masking the true extent of biosphere implosion and planetary heating. The paradox is this: every single climate engineering operation is actually further fueling the overall planetary meltdown, pushing us toward total climate collapse. But don't worry, our government is going to just delete any reference to what's happening in the attempt to pacify populations until the brutal bitter end. Hear no evil, see no evil, as the saying goes. Here's a new report from revealnews.org. Wipeout. Human role in climate change removed from science report. National Park Service officials have deleted every mention of humans' role in causing climate change, which includes climate engineering, of course, which will never be mentioned by official agencies, in drafts of a long-awaited report on sea level rise and storm surge, contradicting Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke's vow to Congress that his department is not censoring science. The National Park Service's editing of the report reflects unprecedented political interference in government science and the Interior Department, which oversees the Park Service. Total omission of the anthropogenically caused destruction to the climate system, which should include climate engineering at the top of the list, but of course not mentioned. There's this new report from the Washington Post and other sources. The trend of completely gutting all forms of environmental protection continues to accelerate. Here's the headline. A fierce opponent of the Endangered Species Act is picked to oversee the Interior's wildlife policy. Susan Combs, a former Texas state official who compared proposed endangered species listings to, quote, incoming Scud missiles, end quote, and continued to fight the Endangered Species Act after she left government, now has a role in overseeing federal wildlife policy. The fox is running the hen houses. Environmental protection across the board being gutted to a larger extent than ever before in our history. Complete pull out all the stops, looting, plundering, pillaging until nothing is left. That's the road we're on. And bear with me, because shortly I will outline why, scientifically speaking, the human brain is unwilling to even recognize such threats. Bear with me. Now consider the absurdity of this new headline from the UK Guardian. The denial of the geoengineering elephant in the sky continues. Here's the headline. Scientists suggest a giant sunshade in the sky could solve global warming. From this report, clearly, solar radiation management geoengineering could be dangerous. There's, as I outline every broadcast, could, may, might be dangerous. If you leap off a 100-story building, you could get hurt. You may get hurt. You might get hurt. If you jump in front of a speeding semi, you could, may, might get hurt. These kinds of terms used to pacify populations and downplay the dangers. From the report, the technique, i.e. solar radiation management, spraying particles from the back of jets to form artificial cloud cover, that's what they're referring to. The technique is controversial, and rightfully so. They add from the report, it is too early to know what its effect would be. It could be, there's the word again, very helpful, or it could be very harmful. The overall idea of solar geoengineering is pretty scary, but it's gradually taking root in the world of research. Think of the absurdity of this report. Absolute absurdity, something that's been going on the sky for decades, launched in 1945. Mountains of historical data to back that up. Film footage, nozzles on aircraft, film footage up close of those, the aircraft spraying being turned on and off at altitude, volumes and volumes and volumes of data, film footage, and the academic community and the power structure controlled media pretending it's not happening, and the population all too willing to remain in their ignorant bliss. That bliss will not be there much longer as we hit the wall. It's coming. The new headline report is, this new headline report, another, is from multiple sources. Worsening worldwide land degradation, now, quote, critical. Not somewhere off in the future, not 2100 or 2050 or 2030 or 2025, right now, is now critical, it states, undermining well-being of 3.2 billion people, almost half the Earth's population, right now. It's worsening and accelerating by the day. Another headline report, climate engineering under the Paris Agreement, a legal and policy primer, addressing the climate engineering legalities, but still pretending it's not happening. Now consider this next report excerpt taken from a recent study by published geoengineer David Keith from Harvard University, whom I just mentioned. Listen to this statement by their group. Quote, making sure that deployment, i.e. geoengineering, solar radiation management, was agreed as widely as possible and was supported by strong support for adaptation and compensation regimes could help reduce injustices and perceptions of injustices, slowly ramping up the solar radiation management cooling with extensive environmental monitoring before and after deployment. Too late for that, isn't it? That could reduce, the report states, the risks of damaging environmental effects being discovered only after the point where the termination shock had become possible. The development of alternative solar radiation management techniques or deployment methods which might maintain cooling while avoiding given environmental drawbacks could allow solar radiation management to be modified to reduce undesired impacts. The report continues, scientists could explore environmental impacts of global solar radiation management deployment, knowing that the system could be safely turned off if any unacceptable impacts were discovered. Too late for that, isn't it? Again, finishing with this report, while there would be opposition to solar radiation management use under any deployment scenario, we believe that even where people or states, and this is the most important part of this report, were initially opposed to the deployment of SRM, this would be unlikely to carry over to support for sudden termination in the majority of cases. What's this mean? That once you start, in their mind, you can't stop. Report continues, to argue by analogy, we believe that few people who oppose the construction of nuclear power plants near their homes would want it to be shut down by removing the cooling rods and allowing a meltdown. Instead, we contend opponents would lambast the original decision to build the plant while pushing for it to be decommissioned as quickly and safely as possible. Similarly, we believe that regardless of initial resistance to the use of solar radiation management, most in favor of ending deployment would prefer to see it phased out carefully rather than terminated suddenly. In other words, they have committed us to an experiment from which there is no return, and they feel that's a way of forcing the population to accept it. Consider the arrogance, the sheer arrogance and hubris of the approach just outlined. Once the planet is committed to the climate engineering experiment of insanity, there's no turning back. The damage is irreparable in many ways and in any time frame that matters. That is exactly the decision the U.S. government and others made over 70 years ago without the knowledge or consent of the people. What happens when biosphere implosion forces the hand of the power structure? as I've covered so many times in so many broadcasts, the global conflict card is the final card that a desperate power structure will play to gain control of panicked populations and dwindling global resources. On that note, let's consider this headline from Washington'sblog.com. U.S. and Russia making preparations for World War III. The aristocracies of Israel and Saudi Arabia will likely have the support of the aristocracies in the U.S. and the U.K. in their planned war against Russia and its allies. Like World War I and World War II, this is a joint enterprise. But this time, unlike World War II, America will be out to conquer Russia, not to conquer Germany. Russia is the nation that has, by far, the most natural resources, and aristocracies always value land more than they value populations that are on it. Stated this over and over. Why was the Middle East a target? Resources. Why is Russia now a target? Resources. Now, moving on, most importantly, let's ponder this point. Why aren't more people willing to wake up and face reality? Why are so many bent on keeping their collective heads in the sand until the brutal, bitter end? Let's consider this report from motherboard.com. Apocalypse Nero. Why our brains don't process the gravest threats to humanity. The human brain simply may not be wired to process slow-moving crises like climate change. And not mentioned in this report, but something that needs to be considered in this equation, climate engineering. The blatant, glaring elephant in the sky, visible day after day. We live on something that looks like another planet now because of these operations. And the population is all too willing to accept the official narrative that's not happening. Let's get to why that's the case. Our brains are incredible. They're unfathomably complex, powerful organs that grant us motor skills, logic, and abstract thought. Brains have bequeathed us into humans just about every cognitive advantage, it seems, except for one omission, the ability to adequately process the concept of long-term civilization-threatening phenomena. They've proven miracle workers for the short-term survival of individuals, but the human brain often malfunctions when it comes to navigating wide-lens, slow-unfurling crises like climate change, and i.e. climate engineering and other threats, biosphere implosion. Humans have historically proven absolutely awful, even incapable of comprehending the large, looming, apocalyptic, slow-burn threats facing their societies. Our brain is essentially a get-out-of-the-way machine, stated Daniel Gilbert, a professor of psychology at Harvard. He says this in university's version of a TED talk. That's why we can duck a baseball in milliseconds. That is, our brain seems to be programmed to react best to hard, certain information. Threats that unfold over generations fail to trigger our reactionary instincts. Many environmentalists say climate change is happening too fast, Gilbert says. No, it's happening too slowly. It's not happening nearly quickly enough to get our attention. That's not the case any longer. Same is true with climate engineering. People, because of their hardwiring, are simply tuning it out. Continuing, it's an unfortunate quirk of human psychology. It's allowed us to outwit and outplay most other species around the globe. We're smarter, more resourceful, more convincing. But it might also come to mean we won't outlast them. There are currently a host of very real, very pressing, and very long simmering crises on our planet. Climate change, but also biggies like mass extinction and biodiversity loss and ocean acidification. All of this is connected. It's not separate issues. Climate engineering, again, massive part of the equation, not being acknowledged. All of these threats, which will take up to many decades before they become full-blown, that's a lie in this report, a blatant, glaring lie. Not off on the horizon, kicking in the door right now. These problems are here now. These are civilization-threatening calamities. The header of a Jared Diamond book called Collapse, How Societies Choose to Fail or Succeed, covers what society is comprised of, humans capable of abstract thought with fully developed brains, but who actively choose to fail. Diamond's work, published in 2005, before the emergence of the post-inconvenient truth climate change awareness boom, which again omits the climate engineering factor, biggest single factor with environmental and biosphere implosion, omitted by the so-called environmental groups. Continuing, details of the myriad of ways that societies doom themselves, primarily through environmental misdeeds that should be ominously familiar to contemporary society, like deforestation, overfishing, and the ruination of farmland, as well as unsustainable social practices like slavery, overtaxation, and loss of trade partners. Biosphere implosion is still the bottom line, by the way. Of course, the societies he examines, like that of Easter Island, we've covered that in previous broadcasts, which he argues perished solely because it gradually degraded the environment it relied upon for food and shipmaking, can maybe said to have had a choice to have done things differently in hindsight. But given what we know now about how the human brain is wired, it's unclear that even given the observable information that slowly failing societies had at the time, food stocks that seemed to be declining, that fewer and fewer trees were apparently available to construct shelter or vessels, referring to Easter Island, and farmlands yields that kept decreasing. Again, it appears that the members of such societies were not cognitively equipped to tackle the existential threats that would prove bigger problems for their grandchildren and themselves. It seems perverse, though a great deal of evidence shows this to be true. Our gray matter is set up to instruct us to cope with the here and now and flails in the face of long, uncertain future threats. And a survey of the research on how the brain processes climate change, again, climate engineering omitted, The Guardian reports that psychologists, neurologists, and social scientists alike have demonstrated that our brains are programmed to respond to immediate or reliable inputs. The slow, gradual rise of global temperatures by a host of difficult-to-predict impacts is perhaps the antithesis of what we're designed to react swiftly to. Climate engineering is, again, in the same category as the rapidly unfolding planetary meltdown. It's a core part of the imploding biosphere scenario, not mentioned in any mainstream report. But continuing with this examination of the human inadequacy of being able to respond to threats that are not perceived as immediate, the oft-cited marshmallow study, in which children were shown to exhibit a willingness to make sacrifices in the present for greater rewards, more marshmallows, in the future, if only they knew for certain that the reward was imminent, that it was reliable, is evidence of said behavior. Kids who weren't sure they'd be rewarded mostly weren't willing to do anything. I've spoken about this in the past multiple times. For those people who are unwilling to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do, they're unwilling to do it unless they're guaranteed success. That's not courage. That's not showing a sense of responsibility toward the whole. There's no guarantees in life. Those who refuse to face the full truth, those who refuse to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do, because they're not guaranteed success, that's not showing courage or responsibility toward the whole. It's up to all of us to help sound the alarm. Continuing, evolution has trained us to respond quickly and viscerally to threats, but when humans are confronted with a threat to the existence of civilization that can only be perceived in the abstract, we don't do so well. That the connecting line between the amygdala, which is described as the urgency center of the brain, with the neurocortex is a one-way street. Emotional emergencies can spark reasoning, but not the other way around. Of course, science itself is anything but unreliable. A staggering 97% of scientists agree that climate change is caused by man. And again, climate engineering being omitted here. The elephant in the room omitted over and over. And while they, the scientists, certainly disagree on the precise fallout, if we fail to decide to change our ways, most are certain that for billions of people, especially the world's poor, will suffer. There's no maybe. We won't just suffer, we won't be here much longer. That simple. Continuing, that's all but guaranteed. But what is it, the big difference between the slowly unfurling climate crises and climate engineering threat that are sure to eventually wipe out whole coastal communities and cities and arid places, and say the slowly unfurling nuclear crises that may or may not eventually wipe out whole metropolises and military bases? By the way, there is no may or might. It's coming. Continuing, why does the one threat, quicken the pulse, and the other, the long-term threat, induce widespread indifference? Even though we're aware of climate change, and we should be aware of climate engineering, any that are slightly awake even, we never seem to list it as a pressing threat. We don't. Survey after survey finds such threats ranking extremely low among American priorities. The primary reason is that our innate sense of social competition has made us acutely alert to any threat posed by external enemies. In experiments, children as young as 3 can tell the difference between an accident and a deliberate attack. Climate change, and of course climate engineering, confound this core moral formula. It's a perfect and undetectable crime everyone contributes to, but for which no one seems to have a motive. So the lack of anyone immediate to lay blame on further complicates the picture for the brain in most cases. Even if you live on the vanishing shores of Bangladesh, in the tinder brush woods of the Australian outback, or the parched dustbin of the American Southwest, your brain is not making the case that climate change and, of course, climate engineering is going to kill you. Storms might, wildfires might, drought might, the symptoms of a warming globe might, no might about it. But climate change and climate engineering itself remains impersonal, an abstraction, and registers little need for urgent reaction. On top of that, we're afflicted with confirmation bias, which helps prevent those whose political ideologies are at odds with curtailing the behaviors that beget the problem to begin with. Mass extinction or ocean acidification, for example, from accepting that they are happening at all. Entrenched conservatives actively seek out the very flimsy arguments that humans are not warming the atmosphere, not acidifying the oceans, to confirm their bias that big government and taxes are the basis to a free society. Now, let's not forget the so-called environmental liberals who are doing nothing to face climate engineering, nothing. Immense hypocrisy that I can barely comprehend. So let's include everybody in this equation of denial. Immense hypocrisy and geoengineering denial from the so-called environmental groups and global warming groups. Moving on. So is there any way to bridge this gap? How do we get the human brain to concern itself with slow-moving apocalypses? There have been countless studies on the best way to frame messaging on whether or not doomsaying is an effective motivation or motivator of action, or whether optimistic, quote, business-friendly language can inspire cooperation with rocking the boat. Here's an example, a study on neuroscience of climate engagement that argues that, quote, moral cognitive neuroscience, and in particular the dual process theory, indicates that up-close and personal harm triggers deontological moral reasoning, whereas harm originating from impersonal moral violations like those produced by climate impacts, aka climate engineering, weather warfare, biological warfare, converging threats from anthropogenic activity, prompts consequentialist moral reasoning. Basically, it seems to be suggesting we embrace an ends justify the means approach, an appeal to our innate moralistic imperative to act towards a greater good, even if that greater good is so far off as to seem uncertain to our survivalist brains. You can see why few of these papers has yet offered environmentalists, politicians, or scientists a silver bullet to rally the masses to action. Humans are capable of tackling long-term immense threats, but perhaps only when it registers unambiguously as a threat to our brains. The bottom line is that far too many are still wired in a manner that has so far prohibited them from even recognizing, let alone being willing to do anything about, the existential threats that are closing in on us from every direction. This trend must change. Will unfolding events, which are nothing short of, again, existential threats to the human race and the entire web of life, finally trigger a meaningful change to the so far willful blindness of the majority? Will a collective psychology of the human race make an evolutionary leap forward in time to avert our current course of certain near-term self-inflicted annihilation, a mathematically certain global omnicide scenario which is already unimaginably near? Though no one can know the future, for each and every one of us, doing the right thing because it's the right thing to do, regardless of any guarantee of success or lack thereof, is the correct course. All of us are a part of a whole. All of us have a responsibility to the whole, to our children, to all children, to the entire web of life on which the future of the children depends. What will you do to help sound the alarm? Peacefully, effectively, and efficiently, sharing credible data is key. Make your voice heard. The sand in the hourglass is rapidly running out. We must make every day count. Until next week, this is Dane Wigington with geoengineeringwatch.org.